Well, he didn't win Most Valuable Oriole this year. Maybe Most Improved Oriole of the 2022 season. You could argue it goes to Anthony Santander. The batter's eye got better, the power got better, and he was a huge part of the Orioles lineup this season. But how good was he really? What were the adjustments? And what is his future with the Orioles? We'll break that all down coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast.
You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Tuesday, December 6th, 2022. And welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and joining us today to talk about Anthony Santander, his 2022 season, and finish off our Orioles 2022 season player review series is Ben Palmer. You've seen him writing at Pitcher List, covered the Orioles a bit for Baltimore Sports and Life, and he is here to talk about Santander's season. But first of all, Ben, thank you so much for hopping back on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's always fun to be here. Always fun to talk some Orioles.
Yeah, so we're talking Santander, and listen, I mean, I don't think the Orioles get to where they got to in 2022 without Anthony Santander. That's where I want to start, because I think across the board, the Orioles had a generally disappointing offensive season. While everything on the pitching side got so much better from 2021, when you look at the offensive stats, I mean, at best, you can say there was an incremental improvement for the Orioles offense as a whole. It wasn't any kind of big improvement, but individual guys got better. And Santander was maybe at the top of that list. So first, just wanted to start with, you know, I am concerned to think about what this O's offense would have looked like without Santander, maybe with a struggling Santander, maybe with an injured Santander. But he was one of their most important hitters this year.
Absolutely. So it's kind of funny because I remember seeing him in 2019, and he only played 93 games, but he hit 261, 20 home runs, 46 runs, 59 RBI. And so I remember looking at that and going, well, if you pace that out to roughly a full season, you're looking at a guy who hits over 30 home runs with like 75 runs and 95 RBI. And then cut to 2022, when he hits 240, so an average drop, but 33 home runs, 78 runs, and 89 RBI in 152 games, so a full season. So he's always had the talent. It's just now he had a full season. And, you know, I would say it's funny because, like, yes, I think he's the obvious, like, most improved Oriole, but it's almost like he didn't improve, he just stayed healthy. Like, there are improvements he made. But, like, the big thing is he was healthy for 152 games. And, you know, had he been healthy for 152 games in 2019, he would have probably had a similar year.
Yeah, I mean, they bring him in from Cleveland in the Rule 5 draft while he's injured. I mean, he had just gotten surgery. You know, they weren't sure if his swing would ever come back, and they took a chance on him. And that's why Cleveland left him unprotected, because he was still in the low minors coming off an injury. And he plays, you know, 13 games in 2017, basically so the Orioles can keep him around, essentially. He plays 33 games in 18. And then you mentioned, you know, 93 games in 2019. Some was because of injury. Some was because the Orioles were just trying to figure out who was going to be in the outfield in that horrendous season. Then we see him finally hit in 2020. But you got to remember, not only was it a 60-game season, he only played 37 games because of an oblique injury that year. That was basically like a good 6 weeks that he had essentially in that season. Then you go to last year, he has the weird ankle injury in Miami and misses time. He only plays 110 games. So we finally see the healthy Santander. As you mentioned, 152 games, hits 240, 318 on base, 455 slugging for a 120 WRC plus, 2.5 war according to Fangraphs. He had never even been at one war for an entire season. He raises the walk rate to 8.5%, lowers the strikeout rate fairly significantly down to under 19% on the season with 33 bombs. And you look at a guy who hit well from both sides of the plate as a switch hitter. And I was just wondering, like, what did you feel like your expectations were for him coming into this year? Because he has the, quote, good 2020, which, again, was a good 6 weeks. He has a disappointing 2021 with another injury where he finally got the chance to play every single day and just couldn't stay healthy to get out there. So I'm wondering, you know, with the Orioles prospects, we're getting closer to the big leagues this year. And you thought, you know, maybe Santander, if he doesn't figure it out, could get pushed out of here by somebody. I was wondering, you know, how he did, you thought, compared to your expectations, because they were definitely different for many people when you look at 2020 and then 21.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely hit like the, I think, you know, what my hope was for him. There was definitely coming into the year, there was an expectation and there was a hope. The expectation was just based on past history, he's going to have injury problems. He's going to show flashes of potential, but I don't, you know, who knows if he's going to really put it together. And the hope was he stays healthy and he really shows like, you know, the potential that we have seen from him the past few years. And thankfully he did that. I mean, this is, I wouldn't say this is Santander's ceiling just because I think his average can be better, but I think it's like just close to, I mean, if it's a 9-foot ceiling, we're at like 8.5 feet. So I think we're really, really close. The big thing that he did, which was awesome, was, you know, aside from just staying healthy and, you know, he had the plate discipline improvements that you mentioned, he also just was, you know, hitting the ball better. It sounds simple, but he had a career best barrel rate at 11.6%, a 43.3% hard hit rate, StatCast hard hit rate, which is pretty much his career best. His career best was 43.5%, which he did in 2021. So essentially a career best hard hit rate, career best barrel rate. He increased his launch angle from 18 degrees to about 21.4 degrees this year. And he had a career best 8.1% solid contact rate. These are balls that StatCast classifies as basically just falling short of qualifying as a barrel. So, I mean, it's career best across the board from quality of contact. So you combine all of that together and you got have a guy who is more disciplined at the plate than he's been in his career. Still not super disciplined. His walk rate is now like MLB average, which is great compared to what it was in the past. But you have a guy who's now, you know, improved his plate discipline and he's hitting the ball harder than he ever has before. And I think that's how you just mix those two things together. And that's how you get the season that we got from Santander, including him staying healthy. And I think it's important to remember, he was a pretty good fielder too. He had three defensive runs saved in right field, which, you know, isn't going to win you a gold glove, but, you know, it's rock solid. There are plenty of teams who have good hitters who are out there, you know, pumping out -5 DRS in the outfield. And, you know, you deal with it because they're a good hitter. But Santander was a rock solid right fielder and a really good hitter thanks to these improvements that he made.
Yeah, I actually was going to get to that. So let's jump into the defense right now because yeah. He was a gold glove finalist in 2020. Again, 37 yeah. games. Yeah, what are you going to make out of that? The gold gloves are messed up anyway. So right. What are you really going to make of it? But if you at least look at the defensive metrics in the tiniest sample size of all time, they were fine.
Yeah. It
wasn't pretty at times last year. I think he got a little better again. So I just wonder, you know, he has gotten a little bigger and stronger. He's 28 now. And yeah. The Orioles continue to draft guys who are a little differently built than him, guys who still have the pop, but are much more athletic. Like they continue to draft center fielders. And basically their plan is we're going to put these guys in the corners because we right. want to have all right. center fielders out there.
Right.
So
right.
I wonder, you know, with Hayes, Stowers, Mullins, McKenna, all up with the O's right now, who are all much better fielders than Santander.
Yeah,
I wonder what you think it looks like for him in terms of where he plays in 2023. Because again, this will maybe depend on, do the O's bring in an outfielder? Do they bring in a DH yeah. type? It's hard to answer this question right now. But do you see him getting more time at DH just because right now you don't have a Trey Mancini on the roster to go along with Ryan Mountcastle, where the DH spot is kind of open right now. And Santander, although it's fine at times, it's also ugly other times from the yeah. eye test, and there's definitely better options defensively in right field.
Yeah, I think he does end up, if this is all caveat, the Orioles don't trade him in the offseason, which I think is a very real possibility given his contract situation and age and all of that and how many outfielders they have. But I think if he's on the team, I think he spends a lot of time on DH. And the nice thing is you have the flexibility where Santander can play in the outfield if you need him to. And it's not, you know, a massive downgrade. He doesn't have to be a full-time DH, you know, out of necessity because his fielding is bad. If he is just out in the field every now and then when you got to, you know, you want to give Adley a rest and let him DH and let someone else catch, something like that, you know, you have that flexibility. But I think if he's on the team, you know, come opening day, I think he's DHing a good bit. And also the nice thing is if him DHing might help him stay healthier, which would be great. I mean, because clearly we've seen if he's healthy, he's a pretty good hitter. So if he's able to DH and stay healthier, even better.
Yeah, it's a big thing for him. We finally saw a healthy full season, and we saw
yeah.
what the results were. We'll get back to talking Anthony Santander with Ben Palmer in just a second. But first, this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is brought to you by BetOnline.net, which is your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis this winter. Now, you can get all the latest odds for every football game out there, every NFL Sunday. Of course, college football, bowl season coming up, and college football playoff just right around the corner. We found out the four teams on Sunday, and you can get all the lines and odds for every game at BetOnline. They've also got college basketball, the NBA, the NHL, and the World Cup as it continues on over in Qatar. And if you love sports podcasts, which I hope you do if you're listening to this one, you can find those at BetOnline as well. They're always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fix. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more at BetOnline, where the game starts. So we're here with Ben Palmer of Pitcher List and Baltimore Sports and Life talking about Anthony Santander and his 2022 kind of bounce back season, you could say, with the Orioles. And Ben, I talked about this a little bit, but wanted to touch on this point a little bit more just because it was really the big talking point, especially early in Santander's season when he got hot early in the year for the O's. And that was the changes in the plate discipline. Now, again, you mentioned, you know, he got the walk rate up to league average. So it still wasn't like he was some sort of walk god at the plate. He was just getting better, yeah. And he dropped the strikeout rate as well. And it seemed like in terms of major league hitters, he was kind of the first guy who, you know, wasn't an O's Mike Elias draft pick, wasn't brought in by Elias, and got to the big leagues and really bought into the swing decision campaign by the Orioles coaches, not just by Ryan Fuller, Matt Borgschulte at the major league level, but that goes all the way down the minor league system. And I know the results weren't that he became, you know, prime Joey Votto at the plate in terms of his walk rate, but he did get a lot better and it really helped him this season. And there was an article by Andy Koska in the Baltimore Sun about how he would focus on his feet and like focus on his toes. And a lot of it was from the ground up with his approach. And, you know, he talked about the swing decisions and working with the hitting coaches. And it's kind of a twofold question, but like, what were your thoughts on him being the first guy to buy into it? And then, you know, what does that mean moving forward for the Orioles that, you know, it's not just their homegrown guys that this system can at least work on to a point where, again, he's not becoming the greatest on-base guy of all time, but he got better at 27 in the big leagues.
Yeah, I think it speaks to the Orioles' ability to develop players. I mean, that's kind of, you know, kind of always been the Astros' way, is taking other teams' trash and turning it into treasure, taking an older guy who, or, you know, or a former prospect or someone like that who has some raw talent but needs some adjustments made, and turning them into a solid player or even a star. And I think, you know, Santander speaks to that ability. Santander had this raw talent, and the Orioles were able to tap into that and work on him where in the areas where he needed to work. He bought into it, which is an important thing, because you'll get players who are like, you know, I'm fine, I'll figure it out on my own. He bought into it and did it, and it worked, and we saw results. We've seen that with other players with the Orioles. You know, Austin Voth is a great example of a guy who, you know, wasn't much with the Nats, comes over to the Orioles, and the Orioles work and develop him and tweak things, and he turns into a pretty solid player. So, you know, I think Santander is just another example of, you know, guys who, I think Orioles fans, we're excited about the future. We want a whole bunch of like big name studs on the team. And I get that, but that's just like, you know, you look at the Astros' success. Yes, they got some big name guys, but a lot of what they did was taking other guys, you know, a Ryan Pressly, for example, and developing them into star players. So that's how we got a Jorge Mateo. That's how we turned Ramon Urias from a waiver claim into what he is. The same with Mateo, it was a waiver claim. So I think it's important to remember when we sign a guy like a Kyle Gibson, for example, who we just signed recently, it's important to remember that there is a chance we can develop these guys into something special. Franchi Cordero, I think, is a great example of a guy that I'm sure the Orioles looked at and said, look at all this raw talent that he has. He just hasn't been able to put it together. Maybe we can figure it out. Maybe we can tap into something, teach him something, something to turn that raw talent into results. And if that happens, great. And if it doesn't happen, whatever. It's a minor league contract, whatever. So I think Santander is just another example of that. And I think that's awesome for the Orioles because I think that's been missing for a long time from the organization.
Yeah, if you think about it, now the stakes seem a lot higher because he's been an everyday player, a middle of the order bat. Yeah. But when he was acquired, he was a Rule 5 pick, and it was basically the same thing. If it works, great. If it doesn't, on to the next guy, on to the next Rule 5 pick. And he's one of the best success stories. Now, there's a little caveat because he was brought in by Dan Duquette and his staff, but Mike Elias' staff certainly, and the major league coaching staff certainly had an impact on him as well. And, you know, there was a, in terms of his walk rate and stuff, there was a big narrative at the beginning of the year, because if you look at the splits, in April, he had an 18% walk rate, which is just ridiculous. And then every other month of the year, he basically was right around 7%. So he was incredible getting on base in April. And then he went to more of what kind of the hitter he is, but that's still progress for him. But the thing I wanted to mention, talking about kind of month by month, it was the consistency of Santander that was so important this year. You look at every month, he only had 2 months of the year where he was under a 100 WRC plus. And those 2 months were May at 99 and then September/October at 96. So he basically never had a dip. It was either I was league average or I was better than league average every single month. And that was huge, huge for the Orioles this year. And again, he hit a lot better from the right side, but he was still above average from the left side. So it's not like he, you know, tanked on one end offensively as a switch hitter. And I think that whole package just made for a better season. So the last thing I want to get to here, Ben, is something you actually touched on already. He's got 2 years left until he would become a free agent after 2024. He hits arbitration this offseason and looks like around, I believe, seven-ish million is the number that MLB Trade Rumors has thrown out there. That's probably going to be about what he gets in arbitration. The Orioles have already tendered him a contract, so at least wanting to keep him around for now. What would you put the likelihood? Could you put a 0-100% chance on Santander being traded this offseason? Because it feels like he's a guy who every offseason since 2020, since he hit in that shortened season, has been brought up as, should the O's trade him? Dan Connolly wrote about it in The Athletic about literally on Monday, should the O's trade him? Yeah. Do you have a percentage chance, you think, this offseason that he could be dealt? I know a lot of it depends on what else the Orioles do, but certainly a name that's out there.
Yeah, I think I would say it's above 50%. I'd say let's call it like 65%. So like more likely than not, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I think if you were a team that has a, you know, or looking to trade, looking to, I don't know, rebuild, I guess, a package of Santander plus a couple of our excess prospects, you know, we've got a glut of middle infield prospects. So, you know, Santander plus Jordan Westberg, or Colton Cowser and somebody else, you know, Connor Norby, I don't know, something like that. I think that's a pretty enticing package for an ace pitcher or something like that, for a Corbin Burns or something along those lines. Obviously, I don't know. I don't think the Brewers need another outfielder. But, you know, I think that's a package because I could see some teams maybe balking at just a full prospect package. Santander's not, you know, super old. Like, you know, he's like 29. Yeah, 28. He's 28. So still young enough that he's still got a handful of years of being a good player left in him. So I would say it seems more likely than not, given his contract situation. And given, you know, I think the Orioles want to lock down that rotation and get kind of an ace pitcher in there. But like I said, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I don't think it's like super obvious he's getting traded. So yeah, I'd call it 60, 65% chance it happens.
And the interesting part of this conversation though now is if you would have said 65% chance last offseason, which I could have seen, the trade would have been very different. It would have been the Orioles trading Santander away to get prospects. Now it seems like if he's going to be dealt, it's going to be in the deal that gets the Orioles major league talent. I'm going to put the number maybe around 25, maybe 33%, like maybe half of what you put there. I think it's definitely a chance. I think if it happens, it will be in one of those deals where the Orioles go get an ace. The team wants a couple prospects, but they say, wait a minute, we're not like in full tear it down rebuild mode. Like maybe if it's the Marlins, it's like, hey, we would like a major league piece because our team feels like we're close enough where we should do that. And so we, you know, we've heard about the people proposing deals like, you know, would the O's do a straight up like Mullins for Pablo Lopez? So maybe it looks like a similar deal to that where it's like a Santander and a prospect for a, you know, a Jesus Luzardo or something like that. I could see that happening. But what I will say is, you know, I did hear that the Orioles, there could have been a third trade made at the deadline this year and the Santander name was out there in terms of, you know, after trading Mancini and Lopez. So it's certainly on the mind of Mike Elias. He's definitely taking calls, but I think that trade would have looked different than what this trade would look like this offseason, which for more of in addition to the team. I just think with the 2 years left, he's still fairly cheap for his production at around $7 million. If the O's maybe whiff on if they're going after the Michael Brantleys of the world, the left-handed hitter, we've seen that they're going after the Josh Bells.
Yeah.
Even if Santander is mostly a DH, I think he fits the lineup well enough to come back and produce out of the five or six hole for a playoff team, at least for this year. And then maybe you could revisit it after next season.
Yeah. I think the contract gives him enough flexibility that you could still wait to trade or something like that, get another full season under his belt, especially DHing. Maybe he gets even better. Who knows? I mean, his expect, you know, his batting average was around 240. His expected batting average last year was around 260. So all of a sudden he hits 30 to 35 home runs, batting 260, 270 or something like that. And he's suddenly a bit more of a valuable player. And like I said, he still gives you that flexibility of like, if you have to use the DH spot for somebody else, he's not going to hurt you in the field. So yeah, I can definitely see the argument of hanging on to him. It kind of depends. You know, Mike Elias said it's liftoff and it's time to start doing stuff in the off season. You know, I think a lot of people interpreted that for whatever reason as all of a sudden the O's are going to start blowing money and being at the top of the free agent market and making big trades. And, you know, I think he's easing his way into the market with the anticipation that the Orioles are a playoff or World Series team within the next 4 to 5 years. So, you know, maybe they wait another year, kind of solidify the team a little bit, make some progress, and then Santander is somebody we look at trading, or maybe even at the deadline. Maybe he ends up being a deadline piece instead. Yeah, I could definitely see them hang on to him.
Yeah, but it definitely, you know, it's a lot easier to swallow trading a player that productive if it's, hey, here's the guy the other team wanted to get us one of these top of the rotation guys instead of, here's a couple of double-A guys for Anthony Santander. And that, at the very least, very least is showing that the Orioles are shifting a bit. Because I think a lot of people agree, whether you think he'll be traded or not this offseason, I think most people agree if he is dealt, it's in one of those deals you talked about, and it's not in a deal that it would have been over the last 2 years. But Ben, thank you so much for joining us to talk about Anthony Santander. It was a great season for him. You know, whether or not he's in an Oriole uniform next year, he still has some room to grow. I'm hoping he is he's in this Orioles lineup because he definitely showed he can be productive for a good baseball team. Had a lot of big swings for the O's last year as well. And hey, it was fun to watch him be healthy. Finally, I think that's where we can end. It was fun to watch him be healthy. And thanks again for coming on the pod.
Yeah, happy to do it whenever.
So our thanks again to Ben Palmer of Pitcher List for joining the show. You've seen him writing over there about some fantasy baseball, some other things. Also has written about the Orioles over at Baltimore Sports and Life as well. Is an O's fan, has been on this podcast multiple times before, and thank him again for joining us to talk about Anthony Santander and really what was a breakout season for Santander. And you could argue that 2020 was a breakout season, but again, that was 60 games. And remember, because he had that oblique injury that year, he only played 37 of those 60 games. And even though he was named most valuable Oriole that year, it's kind of more about the state of the Orioles at that point than anything else. But he played a pretty full, healthy season in 2022. He hit for power, he got the walk rate up, and he was a legitimate middle of the order bat for an Orioles team that was in a playoff push for most of the season. And you can't ask for anything more than that from a former Rule 5 pick who was injured for basically over a full year after the Orioles scooped him up from Cleveland in the Rule 5 draft. So good job by Dan Duquette and his staff back in the day in 2017, picking up Anthony Santander, and he's paying dividends now. And it will be interesting to see. You know, he's got 2 more years under his contract with the Orioles, that rookie deal. We'll see what they do with him. I know Dan Connolly at The Athletic wrote a column on Monday about how he thinks the Orioles should trade Santander this offseason. I was on the trade Santander train really last offseason and the offseason before that. I thought, you know, Rule 5 pick capitalized on the value, especially after 2020. I thought that was a good time to maybe pull the trigger. But the Orioles held on to him, and it worked out because he got better and better and was a huge part of this lineup. I mean, this Orioles lineup without Anthony Santander in 2022, they've got a losing record, and the lineup that already was below average looks abysmal, and there's nothing that the starting pitching or the bullpen could have done to keep them in a playoff race. But Santander was a huge, huge part of this team this year. Obviously, had the weird thing where the Orioles had the offer that they finally snapped when he would homer twice, but he did have a good amount of multi-homer games. Just a really cool season for Anthony Santander as well. He saw some cool articles. You know, Andy Koska in the Baltimore Sun writing about how, you know, he really focused on his toes and his feet that really helped him kind of break out this year, but a cool player and a cool season for Santander. But before we go today, just did want to update you on some Orioles news from Monday at the winter meetings. Of course, the O's did not make any big splashes. We know they signed Kyle Gibson to a 1-year deal over the weekend. As of recording here just after 7 p.m. Eastern time on Monday evening, we still don't have a dollar figure on that Gibson deal. Again, I'm expecting somewhere right around $10 million on the 1-year contract, just based on what the rest of the starting pitching market has been so far for guys like him. Mike Clevinger getting $12 million from the White Sox, maybe a little higher upside, but general similar performance. So we will see what Gibson ends up getting. And although the Orioles weren't super busy, we did see some huge, huge deals go down on Monday. It all started with the Justin Verlander deal. After the Mets lose Jacob deGrom to the Texas Rangers, they go out and get Justin Verlander. Kudos to them on a 2-year, $86 million deal, $43 million a year. And Verlander deserves it. I know he's pushing 40, but he just won the AL Cy Young this year. He is completely worth that value, and there's a third-year vesting option as well, so they could have him for, you know, maybe the final 3 seasons of his big league career if he wants to pitch that long. But hey, you lose DeGrom, you go get, you know, the Cy Young winner in the other league. Pretty nice job by the Mets to at least try and fill that Jacob DeGrom hole. And then you had even more money shelled out a couple hours after that. The Philadelphia Phillies ended up with Trey Turner on an 11-year, $300 million deal to have Turner come in and play shortstop and hit at the top of that Phillies order. And a Phillies lineup that was really scary, that got them to Game 6 of the World Series, becomes even scarier, adding one of baseball's best hitters last year in Trey Turner. And again, you look at 11 years and you say, oh my God, 11 years. But when you look at the contract, again, 11 years, $300 million. $300 million is a lot of money. But when you spread it out over 11 years, it's less than $30 million a year, and there was a chance that Trey Turner maybe could have gotten more than $30 million a year if he did take a shorter deal, but instead he takes the long-term deal. They'll get him from age 30 to age 40 on that deal, and yeah, maybe his speed will go away, but for the first 5 or 6 years of that deal, I think you're still going to get an elite Trey Turner, and I think the Phillies can win a World Series in that time frame, which is why you lock up Turner. You have Bryce Harper. Of course, you know, you have Rhys Hoskins. You have Kyle Schwarber. You have all the guys in the middle of that lineup right now. And you've got the pitching. They're probably going to add a starter. The Phillies team is looking good. And those are really the two big, big signings. And those were definitely two guys who you could dream that the Orioles would go after, a starting pitcher and a shortstop of the top variety. But Turner now off the board and Verlander as well. Hopefully the Orioles turn their sights to Carlos Rodon and to Carlos Correa. Maybe bring in the two Carloses. Wouldn't that be a great offseason? But we haven't heard anything further about the Orioles connected to those two guys. We know John Heyman did report that the Orioles are one of 8 or 9 teams right now in on Carlos Rodon. Heyman writing that over the weekend. But we did see on Monday that the Orioles are connected to another one of the big starting pitchers. And that would be Jameson Taillon, who I've talked about multiple times on this podcast so far in the offseason, talking about how he really would be, a great fit in this Orioles rotation. Maybe not, you know, the lockdown number one guy you add to the rotation, but I think can really be a good number two in any rotation. The O's could certainly take that right now in Jameson Taillon. And it was reported today by Mark Feinsand that The Jameson Taillon market is deep. This is what he tweeted. But sources tab the Mets, Phillies, Cubs, and Orioles among teams to watch. And it's pretty cool to see the O's in that list because you've got the Mets with all the money in the world to spend, just brought in Verlander and are putting together a super team. You got the Phillies that spend all the money in the world, just went to the World Series. And you got the Cubs who, although they tanked the last couple years, I think are kind of preparing to spend money once again this offseason. And it's cool to see the Orioles right in that list with those guys. I would definitely like to see Jameson Taillon come into Baltimore. Again, he's 31 years old, the right-hander, had a 3.91 ERA, made 32 starts, 177 innings with the Yankees last year, stayed healthy. That's been a little bit of an issue with him earlier in his career. But a 3.91 ERA, a 3.94 FIP. Again, he's not the ace type, you know, only 7.7 Ks per nine, but I think would be a pitcher that could come in and really, really help the Orioles. It would be interesting to see if the Orioles' only two starting pitching additions were Taillon and Kyle Gibson. I'd be okay with that, but probably would still be a little disappointed if that was the end of their just starting pitching-wise offseason in free agency. I think if you go get Taillon and you get Gibson, you either have to get Rodon or you have to add one more piece. Maybe, you know, we know they met with Noah Syndergaard over the weekend. Maybe you add him too. It looks a little bit better. You're still kind of not playing at the very top of the market. But either way, I would like Jameson Taillon on this Orioles team. And hey, if it's Rodon, Taillon, and Gibson, that is a great offseason pitching-wise for the Orioles. But they did actually bring in another pitcher on Monday. Now, not on a major league deal, but on a minor league deal. And that pitcher is 27-year-old right-handed pitcher Ofrady Gomez, who actually has never pitched in the big leagues, but the Orioles did sign him to a minor league deal on Monday. Gomez, who started his professional career with the Kansas City Royals when he was 17 years old in 2013, he was in the Royals org for a pretty long time, his full 7 years with the Royals, actually got to AAA with Kansas City in 2019 at age 23, but his contract ran out. They didn't re-sign him. He became a free agent. He did not play in 2020, signed with the White Sox in 2021, pitched in AA and AAA that year, but really struggled in AAA. The White Sox didn't bring him back. Then the Phillies brought him in on minor league deal last year. And again, absolute dominance in AA for Gomez last year with the Phillies, 20 innings out of the bullpen for him. He had a 1.35 ERA, struck out 12.6 batters per nine, and only walked 3.1. It was ridiculous stuff. So as has happened for him the last 3 years, they move him up to AAA because he's 26, dominating AA. You got to go to AAA. And AAA, once again, was a large issue. He struggled in AAA 2019 with Kansas City, struggled in AAA 2021 with the White Sox, struggled in AAA 2022 with the Phillies. 24 appearances, 3 starts, 23 and a third innings for Gomez at the AAA level last year, an 8.49 ERA. Now, the strikeouts were still there, 10.4 Ks per nine. He walked 10 batters per nine at the AAA level. 23 and a third innings. He allowed 28 hits, 22 runs. Now, 27 strikeouts. That's a good number. 26 walks, 2 hit by pitches, and 13 wild pitches in 23 and a third innings. Basically, here's the scouting report on Gomez. Great stuff. When it's anywhere near the strike zone, he's dominant. But in AAA, he's never found the strike zone, and it can get really ugly. But again, it's a minor league signing. You know what that means? Basically no cost to the Orioles. It is nothing. They bring him in. If it doesn't work out, they release him. It doesn't matter. You can sign as many guys as you want on minor league deals. I know people are always, oh, you know, that's the Orioles' big deal of the offseason, whatever it may be. No, you can bring in as many. The same thing with Franchy Cordero coming in on a minor league deal. He doesn't take up a 40-man roster spot, doesn't take up anybody's spot, doesn't block anybody, barely costs any money. Bring in as many flyers as you can on minor league deals. And that's what they're doing here with Gomez. He's got high upside because of the good stuff. They're just going to try to figure out his release and his command. And if they can, he still has a big league reliever upside. And that's why the Orioles went after him. Who knows if it'll work out. But hey, you know, they signed those guys like Denny Reyes and Rico Garcia to deals like this last offseason. Although they weren't impact guys at the big leagues, they came up to the bigs at times and helped the Orioles out of the bullpen and in the rotation as well. And maybe Gomez at some point next year when the O's need an arm can fill that role for a bit as well. But we're still waiting on the bigger name pitchers for the Orioles to go after. Again, connected to Carlos Rodon, connected to Jameson Taillon. I'd like to think they've reached out to Chris Bassett as well. Those should be kind of the three guys they're targeting. And hopefully there's a big move on the horizon for the Orioles here at the winter meetings. And I'll be back with you for an episode tomorrow, Wednesday pod, breaking down everything the Orioles do, whether it's rumors or whether it's a signing or a trade. We'll have it all for you here on tomorrow's episode. Also, we'll break down the results of the first ever MLB draft lottery. That is coming up tonight, and we will know what pick the Orioles will have in the first round of the 2023 MLB draft. There is a very, very minute chance that the Orioles could potentially win the lottery and get the number one pick. Not looking very possible. They'll probably pick somewhere around 15 or 16, but we'll talk about it coming up on tomorrow's episode. Until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.